When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
The story noted, there is no immediate explanation as to why the five suspects would want to bug the Democratic National Committee offices, or whether or not they were working for any other individuals or organisations. Bernstein had written another story for the Sunday paper on the suspects. Four were from Miami. Bernard L. Barker, Frank A. Sturgis, Virgilio R. Gonzalez, and Eugenio R. Martinez. He had called a Miami Herald reporter and obtained a long list of Cuban exile leaders. A Post reporter had been sent from the president's press party in Key Biscayne to make checks in Miami's Cuban community. All four of the Miami suspects had been involved in anti-Castro activities and were also said to have CIA connections.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to All the President's Minutes. I'm your host, Blake Howard. There aren't many news websites, movie news websites specifically, that have been online for more than 20 years. And I'm speaking to the editor and the runner and the chief writer and the engine and basically the unstoppable T-1000 that is Mr. Garth Franklin, a dear friend and engine behind Dark Horizons. And I'm about to talk to him about a newsroom, which I would wish for him one day that he could A, wear the suits, B, have the office, and C, have the red pen of some of the men we're going to be talking about in this 1976 classic. Garth Franklin, welcome to All the President's Minutes.
Well, and also welcome to probably the least qualified minute of this entire podcast. I mean, you're dealing with a profession that has so thoroughly changed in the time that since, and it's fascinating. To be, you know, I've never actually worked in the newsroom.
No.
Although I have been an editor for like 22 years. So this is, you know, this is the crazy thing of this life.
No, but it's the world, you know, the omnipresence of the internet really took place close to the time that you started.
Pretty much. Yeah, it was literally a couple of years, just two or three years before is when the internet kind of kicked off.
Essentially. Really kicked off. And you were of that first wave that people thought, oh, a lot of these guys are going to die down. And many people, new sites have emerged and disappeared, mm-hmm. new sites emerged, disappeared. And basically that is where we've come to. And I was desperate, you as a film mind, you as a person who knows story, but also as a person who has been a kind of journalistic outsider. I don't think you're unqualified at all to talk about it.
Yeah, that's sort of true. I mean, I started in that age where there were people who, you know, when they're trying to make offers, because I'm in that position where I'm both the editor and the publisher and sort of lead writer. So that's, you have all three sort of hats on at one point. When you're the publisher, you have to deal with the economics.
You're Kay Graham. Yeah. And Ben Bradley.
And Ben Bradley.
And Woodstein.
Yeah. So all in one go. But then you have to get in the position of, you know, trying to make the paper profitable, in this case, or the website profitable or whatever. And you go through that position. Early in the internet, there was that period where you would get offers from people who thought print was it. That was only it. And I was always very much an online-only person. So when I said, no, I have no interest in doing getting into the print stuff, they were legitimately shocked. Like, how can you not do this?
Yes.
Because that's the only legitimate thing of record. And, of course, that has changed, and now newspapers are dying out, sadly. And a lot of the print stuff is now where all the long-form journalism, the little of it's left, is still residing, actually.
Still residing in print, because that seems to be like the last place of elevation for long form stuff. But also, you're a great film mind. You've been around this industry now for like 20 odd years. And we had the distinct pleasure of only about 6 to 8 weeks ago now seeing this on the big screen together, and your very, 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 very first time of actually seeing
Not very, very, very first time. This was one of those, you know, everyone has holes in their schedule and these kind of things to fill, and I made the unfortunate mistake of trying to watch this the first time when I was 20 and on my own for the first time in Los Angeles, and let's just say my hands and other extremities were occupied at the time after the lascivious sort of actions. So I wasn't really paying attention. And then I finally come back to it now 20 years later for the first time 6 weeks ago. And, yeah, it's basically a perfect film. It's really quite remarkable as a movie.
Yes. And exactly the kind of movie that I would be mad enough to do this with.
Well, that's you, my friend. our beloved Mr. Howard here, who is the host extraordinaire, gets very obsessive about certain movies, and this is one of the ones he's long, long spoken to me about.
Yeah, look, I mean, we were in the 60s of One Heat Minute, and I'd pitched this original idea on a balcony at my house at a barbecue, and you and Stu, who you're going to hear in the forthcoming episode of Mr. Luke Buckmaster, and Rosie were all on the balcony, and people, you guys were one of the first to go, okay, well, if this One Heat Minute thing actually finishes, what will you do next? And mm-hmm. Right then and there, I said all the President's Minutes. Mm-hmm. Just rattled it off. I said, it's coming. And then I kept quiet about it because it was – didn't look like that reality would ever end. didn't know that it would ever come to fruition. But this is a movie that is I can't put it any better than my co-host that I did, which is that it is essentially a perfect movie. It is so thoroughly entertaining. And so...
Well, because it's a perfect movie in the best way, because it gets what also the whole subject is about, journalism is about, which is it's attention to the details. It's going, basically sticking with the truth, being a very, very lean, efficient beast that's all about the facts and all about the little details. Everything's explained carefully, well, but not but also cinematically too, with some of those shots. Some of the shots in the minute we're about to discuss. I mean.
Just wonderful.
Yeah.
Just absolutely wonderful. So let's do it. Let's dive into the minute because we're going to have a lot to talk about. It's got a great moment that even I, as a very proud Dark Horizons film critic, have had, where you answer your editor with, I'm just polishing it. So here we go. You guys know the drill. Garth and I are going to watch this minute. You guys are going to listen along, and then we're going to come back and unpack it for you.
Good. All right, stay there.
All right, I got something for you. See this? Couple sleeping in bed. Car hits the house, goes through their bed, and comes out the other side.
Good morning. Crash. Morning. Oh, Lewis is over at Democratic headquarters. One of the burglars had $814. $213, $215, and $234. Most of it is in $100 bills. And in sequence, Woodward.
Yeah.
There's been a break in at
Democratic headquarters. There's been an arrest.
Local Democratic headquarters.
They were bugging the place. Check the time of arraignment and get over there. And Woodward, it was National Democratic headquarters.
Right. Anything else?
Anything else? Break in? Car crash? That's not bad for a Saturday.
Okay, let me know what happens. Hello, Connor. You got anything in that couple?
Harry, I know somebody on the staff over Watergate. You want me to work
for him? Feinstein, why don't you finish one story before trying to get on another?
I finished it.
The Virginia legislature story?
I finished it.
All right, give it to me.
I'm just polishing it. Great actors. You have the wonderful, wonderful, wonderful Jack Warden, who is playing Harry Rosenfeld, and you got Martin Balsam playing Howard Simons. Harry is the Metro editor. Howard Simons is national editor of the Washington Post. And so you've got these guys just sort of farming off stories to one another and talking about what's happening. It's a Saturday. It's a slow day. And from what I've read in the Older President's novel, as far as the newsroom rhythm would go, is the week to week, the weekdays are the big days. Sunday is often a feature day. And I guess in print, that's pretty standard. But just to sort of, and some people who are listening might just go, yes, that's self-evident. But, you know, this was new to me. But, you know, Monday to Friday, they're big days. Some papers had morning and evening print deadlines. At the time, the Post was only a one print deadline day, so they would print for a morning, like a day edition, and that would go out. Some papers at the time had a morning and evening edition, small editions, but they've got the morning edition, and they're just getting a couple of big stories that look like it's pretty good for a Saturday. It's got some news. There's been a burglar at the National Democratic headquarters.
There's been a car through a house.
You know, they're talking shop. Very fun, great, and some just absolutely stunning photography.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
In this of
Just the placement of things in the room and the shots, like the shot with like the Hoffman hanging out around the doorway listening.
And so there's
not very subtle, Dustin.
No, absolutely, completely unsubtle. But what is good is there's sort of a flow in the conversation, a natural hustle and bustle, some folks moving. Obviously, Woodward prone in his bed taking notes, and as the
that's true. That rings so true with any journal.
But it's about 22 seconds in the minute is this beautiful split diopter dual focus moment where Martin Balsam, who's just got the best face, like one of the best
cinematic face.
He's got great lines. He's expressive. His glasses are reflecting the yellow paper that aren't Jack Warden, so Harry Rosenfeld's desk. And
normally with these split ones, you know, you can see the line in the middle so clearly. It's like, and it looks kind of like
it looks a bit funny.
This looks flawless. I don't see the line whatsoever.
I don't see the line whatsoever. It is absolutely flawless. No surprise. It's Gordon Willis who's the man behind the lensing, the Prince of Darkness, one of the greatest cinematographers who've ever lived. And then there's just Hoffman casually looking to the ground but so intently listening. And it's a casual day in the newsroom. So on a Saturday, a lot of folk who were catching up on things, polishing things that had future deadlines maybe for a week later or something like that, or they couldn't get enough sources to solidify a story, they'd pop in over the weekends and get it. And clearly we learn a shitload about both of our key protagonists, really. One is that Woodward, who's working on Metro, doing a few little political stories here, is the kind of guy that can afford to have a bit of a sleep in on a Saturday morning because he's filed everything that he needs to and is probably getting some well-earned sleep after quite long newsroom hours through the week.
Mm-hmm.
And Bernstein's the kind of guy that's in there in the morning sniffing things out. He lives in and out of that newsroom and is a guy who's
he's sort of like the parasite. Just like, you know, that little guppy fish on the shark sort of.
It's a wonderful little minute, tells you so much about that. And you as a man who works from home would know about doing interviews from the comfort of your bed or getting phone calls about deadlines.
Look, anyone who's worked in journalism, you understand the concept. This is not a job you take for the money or for the easy hours. If you want that, go be an accountant or a bank manager. But if you want, the whole point is it's a passion and you do it. And like any passion, it goes outside the hours. And so you're working through to very late and starting very early. You'll, a lot of times because of the world, news does not sleep. News happens at all times. So you can be up at 2 a.m. writing all sorts of craziness. You have to be able to,
you have to be able to pump the brakes on a bender with your friends to write a story in a cab on the way home.
Oh, you don't have to pump the brakes on it. You just have to be able to do it. You have to be a high functioning alcoholic, a high functioning things. I mean, I've literally proofread while getting on the receiving end some very good anal. So it's you have to be able to adjust to all the situations.
My question to you is, and I don't think we've really ever talked. We've probably talked about it personally, but I thought it'd be good for the show. Is I consider you, and I think you are considered as much as you want to downplay, and you're always a modest guy, but it's like you've defined yourself by integrity and fact and that journalistic pursuit in your passion, in your field, being film. What was the drive for you now that now that you're older and you've been doing it for such a long time, did you ever find what the origin point was for that drive for that method? Because I think there are so many people in the online space who have slavishly gone with the clickbaity thing. I mean, you're very fun. You do some very fun titles. Of an article. I'm just saying the funnest of all, which is Avengers beat off Detective Pikachu. One of my favorite.
Yeah, that's just because I'm depraved.
but that's but there's been a lot more like clickbaity sort of people that have been out there that have gone high and then low, and you've seemed to endure, and people rely on you as a news source. Even people who used to run Disney read your site regularly. My question to you is, I guess, what was that drive? Can you understand where that come from? Have you had that sort of internal, how did I get to that?
That's a drive. I mean, almost every journalism has the drive of the one thing that is very hard for all of us is essentially rest.
Yes.
We are restless by nature.
Yes.
We're always striving to, you can go further. You're always asking why. You always look at any kind of situation. You try and parcel it as this is how it is. Try and look at why this is. and how it's going this way. And you have to approach it from all sorts of angles and come at from a different perspective wherever you can. I think the drive, the actual real Benjamin Bradley, who Jason Robards plays in this movie, is a great example of, you know, what a newspaper editor, even just a standard journalist should be, which is the truth is above all else. You have to be honest with your audience. That's how you keep the audience. And you have to, there are, you know, things that you have to acquiesce to, certain demands of commerce and all that at certain points, sure. But as long as it doesn't interrupt your integrity, because the integrity is the whole thing.
Yes.
This stuff. Otherwise, there's no point.
It's everything.
No.
It's.
And we all make, look, everyone makes mistakes, as the, you know, Woodward and Bernstein doing here. I made some like fumbles in my time where we all do. But as long as you're upfront about it and be careful, cautious with it, usually the audience is fine. They understand that these things happen.
And the approach always is integrity above all else.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, the biggest difference, the basics of newspaper journalism in terms of the moral stuff hasn't really changed. I mean, when I initially started out, when I got my first advertising contract for the site and actually became a vocation, I actually went through to like the Herald and a bunch of other local newspapers, the big broadcast ones, not broadcast ones, sorry, the big sort of major national ones. And they all have coded ethics that you got to follow.
Yeah.
And so I made sure to look over those and make sure I was obeying to those sort of rules.
Yes.
But I also didn't want to be encumbered by some of the things that they had to deal with, which was, you watch this film. This is, of course, in the 1970s, so things are a lot slower. You could have people that works for weeks on end on a story. They have so much in the way of resources and time, just time and money and so forth and like that.
Yes.
And that's the biggest change that's happened in my time, is that stories don't take weeks now. They take hours. Sometimes, you know, you have to be within minutes of things hitting. Otherwise, there's no point.
Yes.
Retractions have to be, can't be, you know, a week or two later. They have to be within a day or two. It's the speed of it has changed. And the trouble is, with the speed of it changing, so has the reliability. So you got to basically be very, very reliable and try and keep it to as facts as much as possible. We all stuff up, and I've stuffed up once or twice. We're putting rumors up, and it's like, oh, that wasn't right.
That wasn't a good rumor. But some sites peddle them.
Oh, absolutely.
They peddle the rumors.
Oh, I mean,
Dark Horizons comments on them and gives little quick news flashes that we've heard it and the attributions, but you don't. You'll underscore that something is a rumor and has not been verified by the sources that are involved, etc.
There's probably about a dozen good sort of journalism movies or miniseries or stuff like that, and one of the great ones on that front that a lot of people, it's underrated, is a film called Shattered Glass, which is exactly about this, which is about people just making up stuff from their sources.
Hayden Christensen's best movie performance.
Probably is. Career
defining performance.
But again, it's the editor in that one, Peter Sarsgaard, who's the real scene stealer, who just is like, you know, he shows and takes him out to the convention where he's faked it. And bang, 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 bang. That's like a brilliant sequence.
Yeah.
So a lot of editors in movies can vary in these sort of things and how they're portrayed. They can be a bit stereotypically sort of gruff. But the beauty of Robards' portrayal in this one and a few of the other, like Jack Warden's one in that scene, so is they get it right. They understand that there are commercial needs that need to be met for certain days. So it's like, oh, well, it's a great story. We can use this. This will get hits. And I can do this story over here, which is like the story I really want to write about. But it'll get the side of eyeballs.
Yes.
Because you're playing between the needs of commerce and legal and, you know, what's interesting for the audience and that sort of stuff.
Yes. And
what's the public good?
And what's the public good? And the big one is, in this context, I think there's a great newsroom scene that's going to be coming later, and we talk about it, which is like, there is a story that is a fluffy story compared to some of the meaty political and Watergate stories that are being uncovered. And then goes, you laugh, but that's the only story that everyone's going to read.
Yeah, so even that's sadly true.
Even then, the puff pieces are going to be out
there. The thing you learn very early on, if you do any sort of serious journalism, is you can put your heart and soul into a piece and it just goes ignored. And then you can spend 5 minutes on something completely frivolous and it breaks away. And there are some ways you can kind of predict it, but a lot of cases it just doesn't happen. No. Even today I had one that broke. It was like, why did this story break over there? Okay. All right.
And you can just look and wonder forever. This minute too, you're not as wedded to like production texture and production designers, like say me, you're a story guy. As a film viewer, you need the production design, but you're not like as obsessed with it as me.
Yeah, I mean, you come from a very much a film school kind of background. You studied film as a vocation, and so the whole cinematic technique is, well, it's important to me. It's not as a sort of a vital thing.
It's not as vital
as to you. But I come from a thing of like because I'm a journalist and so I write about stuff. So the whole thing is a good script is the most important thing.
Yes.
And it doesn't, some films can go fine without a script. I can walk into a Malick or a David Lynch movie and I'm like, fucking love this. We watched The Lighthouse the other day and I know you weren't a fan of that, but I love that for the cinematic techniques of that movie, even though it made no sense.
Look, it's a beautiful little, I actually quite enjoyed it, but I didn't love it.
Yeah.
I didn't love it. But I love the swearing. Some of the best swearing you could ever hope for.
But with a film like this, this is essentially a procedural.
Yes.
And so procedurals are built entirely on the writing, on the quality of the writing and the quality of the directing that happens.
Yes.
And in both cases, it's just so good here.
And it's the interplay of, I love casual conversations in movies that are to establish the relationship. And exactly like you talked about, what's commercial versus what's important for the public good.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this scene, I love the effortless with which they say that, and you know everything you need to know about Howard Simons, and you know everything you need to know about Harry because he's a shit talker. He's like, oh, well, whoops, good morning. Cynical journalist, right? Like rough and tumble. And there's such fun that happens in that exchange, and then even in the posturing of Hoffman coming up and their little interplay.
Oh, it's the attention to detail here is just, especially the visual detail, is just spot on. As you said, the difference with us is you're more interested in the production texture. To me, the film is the ones that get both right.
Yes.
You get the scripting right and the production
texture. I think we can 100% agree on that.
And so you can get the way that the behaviors and the lived in sort of sense with that thing there, the way that even everything down to you can tell with that movie, even the newsroom design, where with all the fluorescent lighting exposing all the dark corners and everything. And then you go to the other side of that equation, which is the car park, where it's like all negative space. And there's all like
complete
tiny
negative.
One or it two feels little like, spaces.
It feels like the bowels of something.
Yeah.
You don't see anything in there.
Yeah. So it's the.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's fascinating in that way. And this, I love with this film that almost no other journalism film does, which is it does take the time. It keeps it a small focus. It doesn't try to overreach, and it sort of spends the time with the characters and going through the procedural motions.
You're a big fan of the state of play. Was that original David Yates?
It was a Paul Abbott. There's this guy who Paul wrote Abbott. Cracker. It was David Yates directed it, but Paul Abbott wrote it. He was the guy, great director. And it was like this miniseries back in 2003. They did a remake with the US remake, which was pretty terrible. But what's great about that one is, again, it's like with this where it gets the journalism procedure right. It's all about how the publisher has to work with the editor and how the editor protects the journalist under him. And, of course, there's the line between the journalist sleeping with the sources, which does happen, and all that kind of stuff, and how you try and step away
there's
from the
There's a little
story.
Bit of flirtation in the the Bernstein story here.
Yeah,
My friend told me to watch out for you.
Yeah. And the humor. And it gets the humor right and the thing. That's the difference, of course, there is you have Bill Nye as the editor, and so it's Bill Nye being Bill Nye, and he's sarcastic. And
I would dream for a newsroom that had Jack Warden and Bill Nye in it for that interplay of Jack Warden being who is an amazing comedic actor in his own right. It was later in things like Dirty Work and in Norm, the sitcom Norm, and things like that in his later career.
One of the most interesting stuff with the journalism movies is the way people move within them in terms of, I don't mean in terms of the content, I mean in terms of the actors.
Yes.
So Jason Robards is the editor in this one. Cut to another film a couple of years later called The Paper, which was a very famous movie about 24 hours in the life of a newspaper. He's the publisher.
Yes.
And Michael Keaton is like the star reporter who's going around. Cut to 10 years later, Spotlight. Keaton's now the editor. So there's all these sort of people intermingling in these sort of movies that happens.
Well, look, Chris Evans was two superheroes and different spies and action cinema. And maybe there's something about the inherent integrity of those guys or
the editor is always the most fun role. in any of these sort of movies. That's the one that, because he's like the voice of reason for a lot of the things. He can do the dry, witty mess stuff and all that sort of stuff. The thing with Robards here is he keeps it very sedate. He doesn't do quips. He doesn't do any of that sort of stuff. It's all like...
But I think when Robards speaks...
He has the gravitas, yeah.
It's the gravitas. Where's the goddamn story?
Well, I mean, there was the famous story that he said that, you know, I can't do this role. It's just... I have 15 variations of saying the same thing, which is, where's the fucking story? so I'm like, oh, no, just play it like that. Well, we want to hear all the variations.
We want to hear all the variations.
Oh, okay, and that's how he won the Oscar for it.
Yeah. Well, and also, you know, what people – and this is the Saturday, so in the newsroom, but Robards playing Bradley, and this is sort of famous sort of internet research that you might have – seen on IMDb, or you might have heard on like the Ringer podcast, the Rewatchables, who talk about All the President's Men, which is that Robards was later interviewed and he was on set almost every single day, dressed as Bradley, sitting in his office.
Ah.
And the reason that he did that was to be on deck with those reporters while they were doing it. And he just wanted to have that feeling that he was always there, so that when he came out, there was that feeling that, like, no, I'm in this with you guys. I'm in it. I'm here and I'm in it. And that's around the actors and the people, because that editorial presence,
yeah,
as you said, is important to steering the ship, is important to the way that the story is being told ultimately.
Yeah, but Bakula is also very good at having these, all the people in this film.
Oh, yeah.
Have that very established, this is their life. They've been doing this forever. No one feels ungenuine. It all feels very...
And even Redford, they're like, he's only been doing this 9 months. And you're like, it's not that short amount of time. Like, you know, like, he's been around this specific newsroom for 9 months. It's like, oh, it's not like 3 weeks.
No.
9 months. And Bernstein was, I don't know if you'd call him a prodigy, but like, yeah, he was a young, prodigious journalist, about 16. He'd lived in his newsrooms his whole life. He's just lived there. He's part of the furniture. And then you get Woodward, you know, a completely different animal altogether, and pairing those two together. But it's good because it's this, you know, it's this anticipatory moment where you see Woodward sleeping it off and Bernstein grinding. And it's a great little insight into their personalities in this minute.
So, very true.
So when you're thinking of this movie, this being a perfect movie, what other journo movies do you think help reconcile the difference in like classic newspaper journalism and some of the ethical quandaries that you have in modern journalism movies?
Well, that's a good question. The thing is with this genre is there's not that many films in it.
Yes.
And most of it is there's a very clean line between the ones, the old school journalism, print was still very much the dominant form.
Yes.
And then the ones, which is all the modern stuff.
And then you get things like Contagion, which have like blogging's not writing, it's graffiti with punctuation, Jude Law.
Or you get something like, say, Zodiac, which is a different thing where it is a modern take on the old school journalism. And that's it's looking at it from a whole different kind of perspective.
Yeah.
That would be a similar film for me. Probably the one, it's not about print journalism, but one of my favorites in terms of just straight journalism.
Yes.
Is The Insider. Because gets about the ethics of that sort of stuff and the way the commercialism is coming into it.
And I think what's funny is basically at the time that you started your website, that was the time that these huge newspaper conglomerates were finally wrestling with the corporate and television broadcasters and stuff were wrestling with the corporate inclination to maintain streams of money.
Yes.
And so
that was a big thing in sort of the late 90s, early 2000s. And then I mean, that's why the State of Play thing we mentioned, that was 2003, and that was one of the last of the real old school, you know, everyone had computers in their offices, but this was still an old school paper with a big office and everything open and all that sort of stuff. And then by 2006, when Shattered Glass came out, that's when you had the first film really that had recognized that there are digital outlets.
Yes.
And that they're publishing stuff. And then this is, there was still that push and pull between the two and the, oh, these scrappy young digital people, get rid of these things. And to now the point now where it's like, okay, you don't really have stuff about the modern thing because so much of modern publishing is done from bedrooms. It's done from, you know, toilets and airports. And it's not exactly made for cinematic.
Hey, look. we saw the bathroom fight in Mission Impossible Fallout. We can make you editing that story pretty freaking thrilling, as long as Henry Cavill's arms are being cocked in the
indeed.
But yeah, I'm very interested now, sort of cinematically and procedurally, if there's shows that can start to reconcile some of that thing, because I think the pursuit for that truth and facts and detail and stories and the way that you approach it has not changed.
That's true. The approach in terms of, I guess, getting a story hasn't getting really changed. Getting a story. It's a lot of the industry around it, and a lot of the walls you run up against are completely different now.
Yes.
So the thing I know, in my time, the biggest change, aside from the shift to digital, was, of course, is the shift of public relations. You went from, there was no such thing as online publicists when I started. And there was like maybe one guy in one studio, and publicity was like, even PR was a very, very small thing. And now it's a massive industry. It controls so much of stuff that it is, the journalism is dying out and being replaced by
PR spin.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible, that change.
And
nothing has really dealt with that on film that I can recall.
No, and it's also our very specific film journalism industry, and locally in Australia and also internationally to a certain extent, but there's people who are being paid to write the positive outlook on films that's like advertorial, and there's a blurred line between sometimes there's like pure masthead, like this is advertorial stuff that big journalism sites do in order to keep the doors open so they can write that other thing.
Yeah, but that's true of almost every industry. And then, one of the most famous things when we talk about film, there's this thing called the Criterion Collection.
Yes.
Which is a boutique label of like some of the best movies ever made. But to keep making some of these really obscure, Japanese releases, to release those sort of stuff, every now and then they have to pump out a Michael Bay movie or something like that they know will, or Breakfast Club or something, which are good movies, but they know that will sell.
Yes.
So they can do the stuff that they want. That's true of almost every industry.
I mean, what was the Michael Bay one that was Criterion for?
Armageddon. Yeah. And The Rock was Criterion as well. The Rock, I understand. I'm again. No, you're kidding.
The Rock does have Nicolas Cage,
yeah,
one of the great, if not one of the most fascinating actors ever, and Sean Connery. And look, it's got it, and Michael Biehn, and Ed Harris. It's a masterpiece. Let's cut out all the President's Minutes. Let's get to The Rock. No, I'm just kidding. I wonder what else in this movie. And now in like our contemporary political climate, it's like, does a movie like this, or does the way that we approach news like this, are there movies left in this genre that can live like this, or are we always going to be reflecting back to classical understanding? Like, because, just on my shelf behind me, I've just got Ronan Farrow's book, Catch and Kill. So much like All the President's Men, it's his document about the assembly of that story, the sources coming forward, the way that it was constructed, like what started to scratch at the one single outlet that he was working through, and then eventually how the story, gestated and became, this rolling avalanche of a thing. And I wonder if these kinds of stories that we would tell would just ever be a cinematic choice to be lean ever happen again, because I think that's one thing that I'm hearing from you a lot, and one thing I am agreeing with you in 100% is this story and the script by William Goldman is so goddamn lean, and it is like so efficient and effectively told and pacular, that those two things paired together, that I wonder if anyone would ever have the stones to sort of do that, because even Spotlight feels sometimes like it's too sprawling.
Spotlight's trying to cover, I think, a bigger story than it could get a handle on.
Yes.
It gets a lot of the Spotlight. I know you weren't as big a fan of it as I probably was, but I'm a bigger fan of it because it gets so much of the small details right.
Yes.
It makes some concessions towards very kind of movie things, which a film like this does not.
Yes.
And there's not as much attention to detail in a film like this. But again, you said it is something looking back as opposed to
looking being forward, in the present like in being contemporary.
Yeah,
because I wonder if there's a version of a Ronan Farrow's story that could be made into a film, or is it a Netflix thing, or is it a something? Like, I wonder if there's a, if someone's like reads Catch and Kill, or if someone, you know, reads, you know, we've seen it maybe with Snowden is the closest thing with, you know, Oliver Stone's biopic, but like, is someone looking at a,
yeah,
is someone looking at a contemporary breaking news story? We saw it with the Fifth Estate.
Yeah, they tried with Fifth Estate and Snowden, but neither of them particularly worked pretty very well. No. And the trouble with a lot of those stories is stuff is still ongoing and breaking. So
yes,
you have to wait. Sometime. It is going to be looking back.
Sometime. You yeah, you've got to nurture it. Because I think you mentioned The Insider, which of course we at One Heat Minute Productions are familiar with. But The Insider and All the President's Men have the same have some of the same ingredients, and I think that's part of its success. It followed very closely to the events, but enough time to gestate. It followed with the movie producers being Michael Mann and the writer Eric Roth, or his co-writer in this instance, working alongside Lowell Bergman for The Insider and Robert Redford working with Carl Bernstein and Woodward to Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward to bring together what would eventually be a film and start assembling talent, knowing that they wanted to make it with like basically hot on the heels, but also wait not just for the stories, the individual stories to have broken, but to have a longer sense of like, this is the whole summary of the story, to look at it and then have Bill Goldman, the great Bill Goldman, that is, take a look at the story and go, where is the movie?
Yeah. I mean, well, it's like, you know, Robot saying, where's the story?
Where's the story? Yeah. William Goldman goes, where's the movie in this?
Well, that's the thing. The great ones like this one, like, or like, you know, I'm trying to think of some other ones where they actually have a point of what they're trying to make about journalism on the whole.
Yes.
And, you know, this, there's a film, I mean, as much as I decry the movie remake of State of Play, the one thing that movie does quite well is it tackles the issue of the switchover to the modern sort of journalism and the sort of
and the wrestle between old school and new school.
And so that's a theme that that worked at that time because it was 2009 and that was still ongoing. It doesn't work today because the digital is now basically all encompassing. But there is still plenty of room for like a modern movie to be done in about the procedural current space. About what case it will be, you know, about what story it's trying to break, and about what elements of modern journalism it'll tackle, that's up to the filmmaker.
I want to see bedrooms, Garth. I want to see bedrooms. I want to see lack of editorial control. I want to see redactions. I want to see them wrestling to try and pursue for this. And I think that's part of the process.
No one's going to enjoy, you know, watching the modern sort of like blogger just sitting there and like, trying to, you know, write out a story. He's halfway through and then he realizes, I really got to wank one out, and then goes back to it.
I disagree. There is an audience there somewhere for that kind of story. And I think that maybe that's a great way to close. Because if my dear trailblazing and modest friend who's been writing maybe 30 news stories, what's your mean writing stories a day?
It varies depending on day, but you're probably looking at I write about 800 articles a month.
Who's been writing about 800 articles a month for 20 years?
Yeah. I'm something in the range of like nearly 200,000 stories or something like that, if you add it up.
Jesus. So as far as my modest friend would go, I think the writing that much work with that much integrity, and then
let me tell you folks, it's not Shakespeare.
Some, you know, but part of what is great about the Woodward and Bernstein stuff is that it's not Shakespeare, but it's clinical. It's they are painting a picture. They're telling the story of this malfeasance that's happening at the time, however quaint it may seem now in the modern context, but the detail is there. And and you know what, look, I mean, it would have made for a different movie if one of them wanked it out in the middle of the newsroom. But I think
you never know what Redford got up to in that parking lot before, you know, Felt arrived.
Before poor Mark Felt's hammering away before he lost.
They don't call him deep throat for nothing. No, yeah, come on.
And with that, you know, with Garth's depravity fully on show, I think that's the perfect way.
Oh, we haven't even scratched that surface.
Thank you for being a part of all the presents.
Happy to be here, man.
You'll be back. You'll be absolutely back. We'll talk to you guys soon. Like the Washington Post coverage of Watergate, this podcast is the result of a collaborative effort. Special thank you to our ongoing narrator, Holly McBride, for her contribution once again. A huge thank you to my guest this week, Mr. Garth Franklin. At Dark Horizons is where you can find him, or www.darkhorizons.com for the very best independent movie news site online. Thank you so much to him for coming and being a part of the show. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you want to follow me, I'm at One Blake Minute on Twitter and on Instagram. That's at One Blake Minute. Thank you for your ongoing support of all things One Heat Minute Productions. And if you want to keep following us, you can go to patreon.com/Blake Howard. And for just a cup of coffee a month, you can help sponsor us and our ongoing projects, Increment Vice, One Heat Minute, of course, special bonuses now and then may pop up in your feed. You never know. And of course, all the President's Minutes. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for your support. If you want to subscribe, rate, review, please do share this around with your friends. We appreciate it very much. And we'll catch you on another episode very soon. Just think about it. Come on, buy us a cup of coffee. Patreon.com/Blake Howard. We'll catch you on the next episode.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.